With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This is the Action Network Podcast.
Better than most.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Four!
You got real talent. Don't concentrate on golf.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another golf edition of the Action Network Podcast presented by BetMGM. I'm Jason Sobel. She's Amanda Rose, in for Justin Ray once again. New daddy Justin Ray will be back next week. We can't wait to get into everything for this week's Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial, one of my favorite golf courses on the PGA Tour, and I think one of the more predictive golf courses as well. So I think we can figure out some players that we like this week. It fits a specific kind of player. Of course, lots to talk about from this past weekend. What a weekend. Brooks rolled his eyes at Bryson. And Phil won the PGA Championship. What's going on, Amanda?
Yeah, that's important.
We'll talk a little bit about the Brooks Bryson thing that's taking over the world right now. But let's talk about what happened on the golf course a little bit. I was out there. It's awesome to see Phil do this. I can't say enough good things about Phil. And if you're not a Phil fan, you're not a Phil fan. That's fine. I'm not going to try to change your mind or anything. I can just tell you from being on this job for a long time that there's not a player that I relish the opportunity to speak with, just, you know, kind of walking through a player parking lot or running into in the locker room for 10, 15 minutes and talk about anything besides golf than Phil Mickelson. Phil is a gem. For those who didn't see it, I tweeted it out right after it happened. I don't know. Phil doesn't seem to get too mad about anything. I'm sure he was okay with it. In fact, I think he liked the tweet, but in any case, he did a couple of interviews. It was 5 minutes after his win and I see him and I kind of went up to like give him a little fist bump to say, hey, congrats. And he looks at me, like comes in for the big bro hug and he's like big smile on his face. He goes, man, I hope you got a little payout from that. I know how you roll. And I was like, I didn't have the heart in to tell him at that moment, Amanda. No, I actually had Mark Leishman as my favorite play on the pod last week. He missed the cut. Daniel Berger, boy, he was terrible. 79, Victor Hovland. I figured that wasn't like the most opportune moment to run through my picks with Phil Mickelson. And somehow, and apologies to everybody out there. We like to give you good advice. We like to help you make some strong picks every week. We like to help you earn some money. We did not mention Phil Mickelson's name somehow last week.
We also didn't mention Brooks or Louis Oosthuizen. I mean, and who would have expected the Saturday Sunday that we had? I mean, okay, you do kind of expect Louis to be up there. He always plays well at the Masters. He's just a good player. And then Brooks with his knee injury. Like, that was probably the biggest shock of all. I mean, he really is. Like, he turns on turbo power or something as soon as he gets to a major. It's incredible. And then Phil winning, I mean, it really wasn't even close on Sunday. I mean, Phil never really looked like he was going to lose it. I think at one point Brooks was up by one, but
yeah, first hole. Yeah. Phil goes in leading by one. Phil makes bogey on a hole that was yielding a ton of birdies, more birdies than they had the entire week. Phil makes bogey. Brooks makes birdie. All of a sudden that flips and Brooks goes up one. You're like, all right, here we go again. We're waiting for this from Phil. And the key for Phil Mickelson, we can talk about, okay, still got the driving distance after all these years, but really distance on the longest golf course in major championship history, distance didn't really matter a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It was fast. It was firm. The ball rolled out. He was hitting 2 wood off the tee for the most part. He wasn't even hitting driver that often. The most important thing for Phil was his focus. He's talked about it over and over again for the last few months, the fact that he's trying to maintain focus and he's been losing focus over certain golf shots at times. On Saturday, we saw him miss a short putt on 11, would have moved him to 6 under for the round through 11 holes. Yeah. Missed a short one for birdie on the par five, got loose with the swing on 12, got loose with the swing on 13, hitting one into the water. And he said afterwards, yeah, that's kind of where I lost my focus. That's what I've been doing, and that's what I'm trying not to do. He's been meditating. He's been working on, like, the spiritual side of the game, which I think is really cool. I think people need to know that Phil Mickelson didn't just show up this past week and say, hey, let's, you know, free roll it and see what we can do, and maybe we'll win a major. Phil has been working so hard on, like, literally every single aspect from his swing to his short game to his putting to the mental side of things to the physiological side of things, that this was no accident that Phil Mickelson went out and won. And by the way, after finishing in 69th place at the Wells Fargo Championship a couple of weeks ago, Phil turned to his brother, Tim, who of course is his caddy as well, Amanda, and said, I'm going to win really soon. And Tim's like, yeah, dude, let's like get into contention first. And Phil's like, no, I'm going to win. And so there it is. He won.
There you go. I love it. I love the insanity, man. It's fun. And I do. I genuinely mean that. I mean, and only an insane person would say that after tying for 69th when they're 50 years old and playing on the Champions Tour. So I love it. I think that's amazing. It just shows what an awesome game golf is. You know, this is something we can share with our family and friends forever. And there's no age limit. And that's a really cool thing about the game. And I think he exemplified that.
A 23-year-old won the PGA Championship last year. A 50-year-old won this year. I did a couple of radio interviews on my drive back from Q home on Monday afternoon. And a couple of people asked the question, like, hey, is it in some way a bad thing for the game that a 50-year-old can go out and win one of the biggest golf tournaments? I said, you know what? It would be a bad thing if 50-year-olds were winning every tournament, and like we're looking at the 23, 24, 25-year-olds and saying, these guys are terrible. These guys can't beat the guys that have been out here forever. But
yeah,
that's obviously not the case. We have so many really good young players. So if every once in a while an older statesman goes out there and wins a major championship, which really it hasn't happened before. Julius Boros, by the way, you go look at pictures of Julius Boros when he won in 1968 when he was 48 years old. Compare him to Phil. Julius Boros looked like he was 112.
Nah.
And so the fact that Phil, I mean, he's 50, but yes, he can still hit it far. He can still, the short game's still amazing. So really happy for him. And
he's in the best shape of his life right now. I mean,
really is.
You look at, you know, he's not as skinny as he was, you know, in 2019 when he did the weird diet thing and was just like bone. But I mean, he looks great. He's fit. He's swinging well. I mean, he's one of those players that really, not that I'm aware of, has ever really been plagued with injuries. Like you look at Tiger, his whole career, he's had injuries. Brooks, he's had injuries. Like you look at the guys that work really hard in the gym and these guys have a lot of injuries. Phil has not had those injuries throughout his career. And I wonder if that has helped his longevity and his ability to continue to compete. Because Bernhard Langer's the same way. I don't know if he goes, like, maybe he does stretches, but he's not bulking up in the gym. And he's one of those players that has really, like, avoided injury well and has been able to just keep doing his thing for so long. And Freddie Couples is another one. I mean, I know he has wrist issues, but for a while he was doing the same thing, like, just every week was just consistent. He was healthy and – or no, he has the back issues. Never mind. Yeah, I take that back.
Freddie's whole career has been plagued by injury.
I take all that back.
Bernhard's like the stretchiest dude out there. If you ever see him working out before a round, I mean, he is like super flexible. That's what's helped him. Phil had the arthritis issue, which really
crippled him,
for lack of a better term, for a long time. But he figured that out. He went on some commercials. He told everybody else, take these pills. They'll help you out. In some ways, you're right, Amanda. I feel like this was a 4-day coffee advertisement.
It was.
That we're all like, you know, like Monday morning, I guarantee. And, you know, it's actually probably a pretty good story. But I bet Phil's coffee company was inundated with orders on Monday morning. I saw a lot of people on social media saying like, all right, I get it. I'm going to go try that coffee now and see what it does for me. So,
yeah,
happy for Phil. And again, we were not on Phil on the podcast last week. Apologies. I don't know what to tell you guys.
You sold him on the gimme, right? You sold him when we did the wheel, right? Because you landed on Phil, and I think you sold Phil.
Very possible, yeah. I believe it. I don't remember it. I believe it. It was, that week was a blur, but
I know.
Yeah, no, I thought that, look, you look at his stats, strokes gained, everything was way down. This is a guy who, 3 months earlier, Amanda, he played in a PGA Tour Champions event in Tucson where he's played some golf before and played well before. He finished in a share of 20th place, losing by 11 to Kevin Sutherland. Not exactly like, oh man, that dude's ready to go win a major.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, that's a good reminder for everyone out there who's got a buddy who's 48 years old. They know a guy at the club who goes, ah, can't wait. You know, I'm a scratch player, 2 years. I'm going to the senior tour. Yeah, really? Phil Mickelson finished 20th on the senior tour a couple of months ago. You're a scratch player. You're going to go play with those guys out there. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with the four spots a year, the four cards a year they give out. Like, if you think Will Zalatoris not getting into the playoffs is bad, think about these. How many guys can't even get on the Champions Tour? And another thing, one last thing about Phil. Did you see the text that his mom sent to his sister Tina in the middle of the round? I got to find it, but it was so Phil's mom texted Phil's sister Tina. He said, Tina, text Philip and tell him just to par in. Don't hit bombs or activate calves. Just par. They will have to catch him. He won't listen to his mother. You text him. Hurry. And then she says, I'll text him. He's the only one Phil is listening to today. How great is that?
That's so good. That's so good.
And no activating calves or hitting bombs.
It's fantastic. And oh, by the way, this one, I think in the minds of the public and the minds of us and the media, like, this is going to be a special one for Phil because he was 50 years old and he won as the oldest major champion ever. And we didn't think he would do it again. And that's why it's going to be so special. My guess is that when Phil looks back on this 10, 15, 20 years from now, and heck, when he looks back on it right now, a day or two later, he is going to believe this is more special, not because of his age or not because of his recent form coming into this, and he was able to flip that around, but because his brother Tim was on the bag.
Yeah.
In 4 years, they've won a couple times together, but hadn't even contended in a major championship. And that's pretty cool. I mean, think about, for everyone out there who has a sibling, think about reaching the pinnacle of your career success with your sibling right alongside you and being able to embrace them in a big bear hug after it was over. I just think that was really cool. And I think that when Phil remembers this, he's going to remember it more for sharing it with Tim than just, hey, I won and I beat all those guys.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, yeah, this, I remember on Saturday thinking this is going to be my like adult version of Turnberry, right? 09, I was like 13, 14. And I remember that. And it was so exciting. Like, this old man is out there playing. And now this is our, this is kind of the victor's version of it in a way, like filling it up winning. And it just makes a great story. And it's just not a weekend I'll forget.
Jeez. 09, I was 59. I went to grade school with Tom Watson.
Yeah, you did. I'm sure you did.
God. You are young. All right, let's move on to the other big news of the past 24 hours. Brooks has rolled his eyes at Bryson.
So all good. Right,
so everyone's seen the video now. It's gone completely viral. Went viral on Monday evening. All right, a couple of things from my perspective. So during the week, I was doing PGA Championship radio on SiriusXM. I was in charge for the most part during the day of doing live post-round interviews with a lot of the players who are coming off the golf course. So our setup, it was kind of like ESPN, then Sirius, and then Golf Channel was like kind of off to the side a little bit, but between like the ESPN crew and my crew, which is two of us, you know, it's like ESPN, talent producer, us, no talent producer, them, Todd Lewis and his producer. We're all kind of hanging out in the same little bullpen interview spot the entire time. So I didn't see the whole thing. I think I saw the very end of the Brooks Bryson thing. I wasn't kind of paying attention. You don't know, like, hey, better look over there. There's a viral video about to happen. Like, you know, it's just guys being interviewed everywhere. You're not like, man, I got to go watch this Brooks interview because he might roll his eyes at Bryson. Yeah. You know? So what I can tell you about it is, from my knowledge, I didn't want to go on Twitter saying this, but I'll say it here. From my knowledge, Bryson was walking past and fairly audibly was telling either his caddy or his coach or somebody else, I hit it great all day. I can't believe I didn't score better. And that's when Bryson's like, oh man, here we go. We kind of rolls his eyes. And then he kind of lost his train of thought, which happens to all of us. Todd Lewis, the Golf Channel reporter, who I put this on Twitter. I really hope he doesn't bear any sort of responsibility or blame for this thing, because he did absolutely nothing wrong. It's a taped interview. Your interview subject lost his train of thought. You don't just go, okay, well, we're running this anyway, to which Brooks really said, like, I don't really care. You can do
Brooks didn't care.
And Todd, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to run this. So, you know, they do it over. Somehow this video got leaked, and, you know, it certainly wasn't Todd Lewis, certainly wasn't his producer. The video got out there, and there's some people that are not going to be happy. There's some NBC executives that are not going to be happy. There's some people in Camp Bryson that are not going to be happy. I don't know if Brooks cares or not. Brooks
doesn't care.
Brooks probably doesn't care. Brooks is also the same guy who says, you know, when you say, hey, you got a chance this week? He goes, dude, my knee's really bad. Then you say, how bad's your knee? He goes, don't ask me about my knee, man. My knee's fine. And so Brooks can sit here and say he doesn't care. And then he's going to go, oh, man, I really care. I can't believe that got out. And be like, oh, you do care? He's like, no, I don't care. He's going to
pick a lane,
essentially give you the opposite of whatever take you're trying to kind of push there. So I don't know. You know, like, I get it. It's a fun video to watch for people that don't know the dynamic between them and between some other players. It's fine. It's not like he walked over and punched Bryson in the face. He rolled his eyes at Bryson, which we all roll our eyes at Bryson all the time, which is fine. I mean, yeah, and
you can see in the beginning, like when Todd is starting, you can hear something in the background and you can see Brooks just give a glance over in Bryson's direction. So he must have been listening to him chirping for God knows how long. And then he walks behind him with metal spikes talking loudly. Like, if this was someone that I didn't like very much that just came behind me, even if it was someone I liked and you came behind me and you were talking loudly and I, you know, am in a position where I'm not thrilled or whatever, and it's just it's I don't know.
I don't think it was the spikes. I could be wrong. I could be
it wasn't wrong. The spikes, but see that the spikes are what picked up the most for the viewers. So that's what most of the comments I've seen, like, oh, of course Bryson lost behind his spikes on. You're right, that wasn't it. We couldn't hear what he was saying. That makes sense, that like what you were saying, that you heard that he was saying about hitting it better and, you know, should have scored it, or excuse me, hitting it well and should have scored better. But I love the video. I think it's great it exists. Honestly, I think it's good for Brooks. Like, people kind of like that Brooks, like you said, doesn't care, but obviously he cares, but he doesn't care at the same time. And I don't know. I think it's funny. The Twitter account it came from, I've never seen the Twitter account. I don't know how in 2 hours, an account with less than 1,000 followers racked up 33,000 likes on a tweet. And now I think it has north of like 2 million views, 4 million views. So it's can't wait to hear the gossip and find out who leaked that.
There's a mole.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find the mole. No. I don't know how it got out. Apparently, I don't know if I can say it. Apparently, where it existed was a very password protected internal site. And it somehow got out of there. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know unless the people involved come out and say, here's how it happened, here's why it happened. But
I mean, I'm sure they can figure it out with like IP addresses and stuff and people's credentials. I don't know. I'm sure we'll hear a name.
Yeah. I don't know if this comes down to like an official like police investigation or anything to like track this whole thing down. But
I'm going to go Nancy, I will say, Drew.
Once again, I hope that Todd Lewis and his producer, Andrew Bradley, don't bear any brunt of this because they're just out
awesome
there doing
guys
jobs.
In the industry. Like, they're two guys I love. I like drinking with them, so I wouldn't want to see them have anything bad happen to them that I can't drink with them anymore.
I may have had a drink with them this week as well. So let's move on to Charles Schwab. I almost did it. The Charles Schwab Challenge. This has had so many different
words.
No, I almost said Crown Plaza.
I know. It's a bad word.
Is that the bad word? I don't know.
I don't know because it's the old sponsor.
Stop changing your name all the time and I'll get it right. how about we just call it Colonial, which is what all the players call it. So look at the odds board here. Let's start at the top. Jordan Spieth plus 1050. Justin Thomas plus 1300. Colin Morikawa, 15-1. Answer, 17-1. Finau 17-1. Those are some low numbers for some guys who don't tend to win. Patrick Reed 17-1. Berger 19. Corey Connors 19. Will Zalatoris 25. Joaquin Niemann 26-50. Brian Harman, Scotty Scheffler each at 30. I'll keep going. Billy Horschel 35. Kokrak, Justin Rose, Sungjae Im also 35. Charlie Hoffman 40-1. Emiliano Grillo 45-1, Ryan Palmer 50-1. That's enough before I read the entire odds board. So from that tier, you know, let's start going through it, Amanda. Jordan Spieth, this was sort of the dirty little secret in Camp Spieth for years and years, is that the Byron Nelson was the hometown event to give him his first start, and the one he's kind of loyal to, or at least has to be loyal to. Colonial is always set up way better for him. Yeah. He has six career top tens and eight starts. There's a reason why he's the favorite this week. Mm-hmm. It's not all just due to form, but course history as well. Mm-hmm. What do we think of Spieth, and who else do you like from this top of the board?
Yeah, I like Spieth being the outright. I'm, you know, 1050 is not a bad number, because, you know, we're used to seeing when they put like DJ and stuff up there, it's like 800, 900. So I don't hate 1050. I would rather get him closer to 11 or 12 mm-hmm. personally. But I mean, you know, the course history here, you've been to the top 10, it's plus 125 for a top 10. And you're still, I mean, it's a little better than even money. So I do like his numbers this week.
Yeah. And I don't mind that play. Look, we very often talk about the big plays. I like to gamble. And so I'm talking about, like, you know, hey, kind of like this guy, 200-1 lottery ticket, but I don't think probably enough on the pod, on the gimme, like other things that we do. We probably talk about, like, hey, if you're betting on an NBA playoff game and you had plus 125 on the money line, you took the underdog, you'd be like, hey, they won. What a great payout. That was a nice, that was a really nice play. In golf, hey, Jordan Spieth for a top 10 on this score. I know it's not like a sexy play. I know it's not, hey, wow, you're gonna be able to, you know, buy that new car you want because, you know, put some money on Jordan Spieth top 10. Well, if you bet enough, you can. Plus 125, though, for him to have a top 10, like I said, he's been top 10 in 75% of his starts at Colonial. Yeah. It's a pretty good play, Amanda.
It really is, because like you said, I mean, like I was saying earlier, when we see John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger, or not Daniel Berger, I'm sorry, Dustin Johnson. Did I say Justin Dustin? When you see those guys, a lot of the time it'll be like minus 110, minus 120 for top tens. And it's like, I'm not betting that. Like, this is golf. It ain't the NBA. It ain't football. I'm not betting that. So I do like, I mean, you are getting good value on him. And Justin Thomas, like the 13-1 number, he hasn't been around that number in a while. I don't feel like, I feel like he's been a little bit lower than that or high, which like, worse odds than that, better odds. I don't know.
Yeah, longer.
You know what I mean? Odds. Longer odds.
JT coming off the missed cut. All right, two things. First of all, this field is like surprisingly sneaky good. It's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And I really didn't even check it out until Sunday night because of just being busy at the PGA Championship. But like sneaky good field. Mm-hmm. That said, if you're going back and looking at course history from last year and saying, man, you know, I like this guy as a mid-tier, a long shot kind of play. He didn't really do much last year, though. Remember, last year, this was the, I believe it was the first event in the return to golf after a 14-week layoff. And so everybody, it looked like a major championship field. Like, everybody showed up because, like, these guys are, I've been inside for 14 weeks. I need to get out and go play. Yeah. And so if you're looking at a guy who's, like, a mid-tier player and you look, and last year was 46th place, that's not great. Remember, he was going up against all the big boys last year. So a lot of them are still back. Colin Morikawa lost, missing that short putt in the playoff to Daniel Berger last week. Either of those guys, guys that you like this week?
I like Daniel Berger. I'm actually going to take him on the gimme on our Wednesday night show. I do like him. I mean, he won here last year. He plays well on these courses. I like his ball flight. Like, he's just, to me, seems like a horse for this course. So I like him. I don't love Colin Morikawa this week. He hasn't done as much in the last like 2-3 months as I really expected him to do. Like, I want to say, like, when he went to Dubai in like January, since then he's just kind of been playing mediocre. He makes cuts, but it's just been mediocre. Like, it hasn't been, you know, Victor Hovland's been showing up every week, Jordan Spieth's been showing up every week. We just haven't seen that as much from Morikawa. So I actually don't love Morikawa. Top 20 for sure this week, but he's not giving me winning vibes. I'm not, you know, I don't like him 15-1 this week.
So I did mention it off the top. I said Colonial's a predictive kind of course, but this is a course for the ball strikers. Only, I believe it's 7,200. Doesn't even seem like it plays that long. And so you're looking for the flushers. You're looking for guys who are really solid iron players who are going to play the best. Justin Thomas is the best iron player in the world when he's on. He's coming off a missed cut, which I almost makes me like him a little bit more just because I feel like he plays well when he plays mad. And so I feel like Justin Thomas, like coming off that chip on his shoulder, motivated. I mean, he was tweeting all weekend about Phil Mickelson winning the PGA and how excited he was as a golf fan. And I can see JT being a little motivated for that. Colin Morikawa, obviously a great iron player. Mm-hmm. Berger's proven that. My two favorite plays at the top of the board. One is Abraham Answer. I mentioned it's, I just don't love it outright. The guy's never won. He still hasn't won, but he's been eighth, fifth, and second in his last three starts. So if you're looking for that top 10, plus 188 right now, top 10, I love that number for him to be top 10 and maybe even top five. And then my favorite play on the board, my favorite outright this week, the kid is going to win at some point, Amanda. He's got three top 10s in three career major championships now. Will Zalatoris is really, really good. Yeah. We've talked for 6 months now about, oh, man, he doesn't have PGA Tour status and he won't get into the playoffs and how stupid is this? At some point, he's going to win and we're all going to go, okay, well, we can forget that conversation because now he gained status. And so 25-1, I think, is a great number on him. He's a Dallas kid. He's one of the best ball strikers already out there. By the way, I spent a little time with him this past week. Not a lot.
Did you?
Interviewed him on Tuesday and just kind of spent a couple minutes talking afterwards and before. What a nice kid.
It was the first time you'd talked to him, was it?
Like private, you know, like not just in a press conference kind of setting. First time we're just like kind of shooting the BS, you know, kind of hanging out a little bit. But yeah, what a good kid. Man, nice kid.
Yeah, I think he is going to be Josh Gregory's like next prodigy. Like I know he's kind of moved away from Patrick Reed. Like they've kind of had that little separation. So I think Will Zalatoris is he has a good coach in the Dallas area, and I he's going to win this year before the year's over. I mean, he's going to win an event and still not make the FedEx Cup playoff. Actually,
no, he will. If he
no,
wins,
he would because something. Win, you get your card. But I'm just like he's going to win something soon, and be interesting to see. But you know, and we're getting decent numbers on him because for so long we were seeing him up in the tens, you know, up in the whatever in the teens, and it was like, no thanks, I don't love that. But one of the big moves of this week that I noticed was Patrick Reed has not been getting good odds lately, or he has been getting good odds lately, and then this week he's kind of closer to the top of the leaderboard, and we just haven't really seen him there in like a month or so. I feel like
not a place I feel like I really like Reed.
Yeah,
I want Reed like ripping those big draws. I guess he's hitting more of a cut now, but I like him when he's ripping those big draws off the tee, when he can get up and down. It's just not a place where I would target Reed, but who knows? He's good enough to win anywhere. We say that the best players in the world. This next sort of the bottom of the top tier, Billy Horschel. I thought he was a much bigger number than he is. I'm seeing 35-1 right now. I like him this week. I don't necessarily like him at 35-1, but don't mind him for some DFS lineups and the like. Justin Rose, by the way, I spoke with Justin Rose a lot after his final round. Spent some time with him. He's going to get very hot very soon. He's brimming with confidence. He made 16 birdies on the weekend at Kiawah.
That's
shot
a lot.
73 on Saturday. Made a lot of mistakes on Saturday. Shot 67 on Sunday. That's a whole lot of birdies for a guy who knows when he gets hot, he can get really hot. He won here a few years ago. I'd target him more, and I assume he's playing Memorial next week. I would target him more from Memorial, where he's also won before back in 2010. No, by the way, I always put them together because for whatever reason, that 2010 Memorial always sticks in my mind. They didn't get in the U.S. Open, but Justin Rose and Ricky Fowler went 1-2 that week. Ricky is about to step on the gas pedal.
I think he is. It was great to see him play well last week, you know, especially with everyone giving him shit about getting the exemption into the event. I think he deserved it. He's great for the game of golf. He drives ticket sales, and he's someone that should be there. And I would love to see him start to play better. I just think it's the putter that's been holding him back. But I think, you know, he made putts this week, and I'm really excited to see where his game goes through this summer.
We spoke a lot this past week. Like I said, I was doing radio interviews. Most of the guys, especially the guys that I know, we do, you know, it's a little 2-minute interview, and they start to walk, hey, I'll see you later. And we, you know, we might talk for a couple seconds as they're walking away. That's it. You know, thanks for doing that. Ricky, each day he came in, we talked, and then he stood there and we just kind of hung out for 10, 15 minutes. And sometimes we talked golf, sometimes we didn't. And when we did talk golf, I said to him, I go, it's coming soon, isn't it? He goes, yeah, it's coming pretty soon. This is like Saturday afternoon. And I said, you know, I've got you targeted for the Open Championship. He's in because he was sixth place 2 years ago. So you don't have to worry about qualifying. Played well at Royal St. George's the last time it was held there. I said, I got you kind of peaking there. And
yeah.
he looks at me and says, yeah, I played well there. I like that a lot. And I could get the sense that the other part of that he wasn't saying was, but I ain't waiting 2 months to start playing my best golf. And so the next day he played really well again. He was really mad at himself for making bogey on the final hole, which wasn't playing as difficult as it had the first 3 days. I believe a par would have gotten him into the Masters. I know he wasn't happy about it. He'll get into the Masters. He'll get into the other stuff. I think he's going to start playing some really good golf. But I said to him, look, I knew your good stuff was coming soon. I didn't realize it was like 24 hours away. He's like,
yeah.
It's really good right now. So, you know, but in any case, we're talking about Rose, and Rose is another guy. Rose and Fowler are the two guys that I came away from spending a lot of time around players this past week and said, those are two guys that I'm going to be targeting over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Look at
Colonial, where Rose is playing, Fowler isn't. Look at Memorial, and then, of course, the U.S. Open in a few weeks as well. So, also, all right, moving down the list, Sungjae, like Sungjae. Charlie Hoffman, I like him. Emiliano Grillo, I like him, don't love him.
What about Tringali?
Yeah.
I mean, he was leading after, you know, near the lead on Thursday, and he just shows up. He's been consistent.
He's on my Thursday all-star team, Amanda. He starts great every single week. Sometimes he kind of keeps it going, and sometimes he doesn't. He went 10-7-5 on, I believe, 16, 17, 18, starting on the back nine on Friday. So he can blow up with some big holes and go south on the leaderboard in a hurry. But, he's a guy I have him targeted as my favorite FRL this week, and we're doing this before the tee times are out, but he gets nice early morning tea time. Tringali's guy got targeted there. You like him better for the full thing?
No, I like him for a top 20 this week, maybe even a top 10. But I think this is a better course for him than Kiowa, because you know he can score. We know he can putt. So I think and he's a good ball striker, as long as he just hits it well this week. But I like him a lot for first round leader. I think that's a good one.
All right, mid tier. A couple guys played well. Kevin Streelman played really well, 55 to 1. Phil Mickelson played pretty well last week. He's 70-1.
Did he? I didn't hear anything about that.
No, I didn't either. Really sneaky.
He got kinda swept under the rug.
Yeah. I'm not chasing Phil. Like I just I will be wrong 2 weeks in a row on Phil if he goes out and you know picks another one off. I just I don't know. We sold on Phil last week. If you want to go buy Phil and chase it this week, that's fine. By the way, everyone is going to be on Phil for the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines.
I know.
He knows so well, and he's coming off a major win. And even if it's, you know, even if the books are racking up these $2, $4 tickets on Phil Mickelson outright, and if he wins, I'm just going to frame it and hang it on my wall because that's going to be the coolest ticket that I'll ever win where Phil gets a career grand slam. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not saying he can't do it. All I'm saying, Amanda, is that if a week ago you had asked me if Phil Mickelson was going to win another major championship, I would have said, no, I don't think he is. So now that he's won one, it's really hard for me to go, yeah, he's definitely going to win another one. He's going to get eight, nine. It was a great story for this past weekend. I can see Phil playing well at Torrey Pines, but if you want to go all in and say like, man, he's going to finally get that U.S. Open at Torrey in his hometown when he turns 51 that week, like, that's a lot. That's a lot going on right
there. I feel like Phil's last three majors were surprising. When he beat Lee Westwood on Sunday in 2010 at the Masters, did anyone think Phil was going to win that? In 2010, Phil was 40. Like, why would Phil have won a major at 40?
This is Action Network podcast producer Matt Mitchell, here to tell you our friends at BetMGM have a great new sign-up offer for our listeners, a $600 risk-free first bet. Here's how it works. If you don't already have an account at BetMGM, just sign up, make your first deposit, and place that initial wager. If the bet wins, you get all the money. If it doesn't win, BetMGM will refund you in free bets up to $600. It's that simple. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. BetMGM has been a great podcast partner, and they've got all the features gamblers like us love, like live betting and daily odds boosts. Plus, they're compatible with BetSync, so when you place a wager at BetMGM, that bet can automatically be tracked in your Action app. So open an account today and make your first bet risk-free up to $600. Just click on the link in this episode description to get started. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Michigan, New Jersey, Colorado, Indiana, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia, Tennessee, Nevada, or Pennsylvania. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-270-7117 in Michigan, 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, or 1-888-532-3500 in Virginia. BetSync not available in Nevada. Thanks for listening. Now back to the show.
Getting back to, by the way, Siwoo Kim is the guy I'm looking at, 70-1, criminally undervalued every single week. He didn't play well last week, which I was surprised. Pete Dykhorst plays Pete Dykhorst as well. But Siwoo Kim, like him, ball striker, good ball strikers course. Matt Wallace, maybe not the greatest course for him, but he's moving up. One guy I really like, 100-1 as we start moving down this list, Taylor Gooch. Great ball striker. I was surprised. I looked at the list, Amanda. 55th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained on approach shots.
Really?
With our, far this year. I would have thought he was like top 20, top 25. But
it's surprising.
But still, I, you know, the proof is in the eye test. And Taylor Gooch looks like a guy that is pretty good, obviously, with his irons. Anybody else in like that kind of range? Before we get to like some super long shots, anybody else in that range are you like?
Yeah, I'm liking Gary Woodland. I think he's another guy that's close to playing well again. Like he's, was it Byron, the Byron Nelson that he played pretty well. And then, so I like him. I, you know, he's moving up the leaderboard. And I like Matt Wallace a lot too. He's my first round leader pick for this week. Brandon Grace is another one that I think could play well. It's like funny. You see these South Africans and they all play well at the same courses. Like Brandon Grace, Louis Oosthuizen, Christian Bezuidenhout, all up there this week at Kiowa. Like I kind of like Brendan Grace this week, actually.
Okay. I like those. You're right about Woodland. I do think Woodland's going to start playing some really good golf. I liked him a lot last week, played well, hung in there a little bit. And he has, I know we tend to look at Woodland and say big, strong guy. He's an athlete. He played basketball, you know, and know. You know, all the
Topeka State or stuff. Something.
I will say that Gary Woodland and to an extent, Tony Finau and Jason Kokrak as well, all tend to play some of their better rounds of golf on shorter golf courses. So I think the lean here is we look at guys who aren't power players, the guys who can just keep in the fairway that, hey, this is a chance for the shorter hitters this week to show off their stuff. And this is one of the, you know, four or five chances on the PGA Tour each year where the course sets up for the guys who don't hit it 320 off the tee. And yet you go and look at guys like that, whether it's Woodland, Kokrak, Finau, all of whom have played really good golf on really short courses. And you say, you know what? Maybe the advantage is for the long hitter on a short course because they can just rip four irons off the tee all day and keep themselves in play and not have to worry about it too much. So I don't mind that play at all. There's some guys with big numbers that I do like, Amanda. First one I'll give you, big, beautiful. The big rig, whatever we're calling them these days. We had Scott Van Pelt on our radio show on Wednesday, and he had just spoken with Harry Higgs. Harry Higgs was on the range. We were set up on the right side of the range, and SVP came over, and he goes, man, I just met Big Rig. He goes, I had to meet him because I'm calling him the Big Rig on our show on SportsCenter, and I had to make sure he liked it. And he goes, Harry Higgs comes up to me, gives me a big hug. He's like, man, you can call me whatever you want. I watch your show all the time. So he just seems like, and I don't know Higgs at all, but from everything I've heard from a lot of people, he's.
I've spent some time with him and okay. Some of the other guys, and they're a great group. They're funny. They're always down for a good time. Like they're cool. They're a good group of guy. Like guys, Poston, Aaron Fleener, Damon, they're all good guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Higgs coming off that T4 at Kiowa, his awesome. First career major start, which was awesome, yes. And then going back to his hometown of Dallas, this should be a good week for him. Looking further down the list, Matt McNeely plays some of his better golf, played really well at Pebble where he was runner up, played really well at Hilton Head where he was, I believe, fourth place. There's a definite correlation there where I think McNeely can play some good golf. And then Matthew Neesmith, another guy, he's eighth on the PGA Tour in strokes gained on approach shots this year. Matthew Neesmith is sort of like surprisingly sneakily good. He's got five straight made cuts, nothing where it's like, wow, he's, you know, finishing top 10, top 15 every week. But, you know, for a bottom of the lineup DFS player, for a top 20, top 30 type player like Neesmith this week, what about you, Amanda? These long shots, anybody sticking out to you there?
So Dylan Fratelli won 75-1. He's another South African guy. He's been playing pretty well lately. I think this is a good course for him. Doug Gim is also in the 100s, Texas kid. JT Poston's been playing really well. Peter Uihlein just won on the Korn Ferry Tour. Mm-hmm. And I like Rory Sabatini. I know he's won in Texas. Like, yeah, I like Rory Sabatini a lot for a top 10 this week.
I would suggest taking a good, long, hard look at the strokes gained approach metric this week and looking at maybe proximity to the hole from 125 to 150 should be another good stat for people this week. I think the guys that can play their wedges, nine irons, eight irons really well and fire them close to the pin, those are the guys that we're going to be targeting this week. All right, Amanda, you ready to make the DraftKings lineup?
Of course.
All right.
Want to be a DFS millionaire? You're just one lineup away.
We're going to go nose to nose with him, and you're going to play better than you ever dreamed of, because, God damn it, that's what I demand of you.
So let's get drafting.
All right, so I am going to go with Corey Connors to start.
I like that play. Why?
He's won in Texas before. He's been playing really well. I was surprised he didn't play a little bit better last week. I would have loved to have seen him win last week, but he's just been playing well lately, and it's I am having trouble fading Corey Connors until Corey Connors proves to me that I have to fade him. Because right now there's nothing indicating I should be fading him.
I think for DFS purposes, he is a nice, safe play right now. Like Corey Connors doesn't really blow up on a course where iron play is going to be so relevant, so important this week. I think that he's got a better chance of finishing top 10 than missing the cut, I think. How's that for, you know, a high ceiling, high floor type play. All right, you spent some money. I'm going to spend some money because I think there's some value we can find later on the board. Give me Willie Z. I'm going Zalatoris, my favorite player off the board at 9,900.
You're going with Bill Balatoris? Okay. Yes. I like that. So I'm actually going to go down a little bit. I'm going to go with Kevin Kisner. I know that's way down there, a little bit out of left field. Unless you don't like that, unless you're hearing stuff that I'm not hearing.
I haven't heard anything, but you look at Kisner with five straight missed cuts right now, and it's just not happening for him. And he's missing
cuts. Just kidding.
Badly.
I take that back.
77-77 last week on a course, which I guess didn't suit him that well, but South Carolina guy, he'd been to Kiowa before. Yeah. He played the golf course. Something is not quite right with Kisner. You look at it, let's see, going back over those five events, going back before the Players' Championship, he has one sub 70 round. In fact, one sub par round.
Okay, I take all of this back, and this will all get deleted.
Look, that said, maybe there's value in him as a past champion, a course that should suit his skill set. I'm not trying to talk you out of it. I just that's one of those. I'm sort of just kind of talking through it, not talking you out of it. But yeah, last 10 scores. Let's see: 75, 75, 72, 77, 72, 73 at Hilton Head, which should suit him. 68-74, 77-77. You can do it if you want.
It's not great.
You can do it if you want. I'm not going to talk you out of it because the minute I talk you out of it, Kevin Kisner is going to finish T4 this week. I'm never going to hear the end of it.
Okay. All right. We'll take Kiz, but I was going to take Joel Damon. So anyone who's listening, there's an asterisk next to Kiz. And instead of taking Kisner, you can take Joel Damon. You're welcome.
Okay.
There's just certain names that pop up to me and I remember seeing the name and I don't put money on it. And then come Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the names are top 20, top 10. And I just want to punch myself in the face.
All right. I'm trying to go value or hunch I'm between two guys here. Siwoo Kim, I mentioned. I just think there's too much value on him. I mean, Siwoo Kim at 7,600. I get it. He missed the cut last week. At the Nelson, he wasn't great, 55th. Before that, he finished 33rd, 12th, 23rd, 9th. That's solid. I like him. Last week really throws me off, though, missing a cut on a Pete Dye course where he's played well before. So I'm going to go a little bit lower. I think it's going to be a good Taylor Gooch week. He's been playing really well. He's been knocking on the door for something seriously good for a while. At 7,300, I'm going to throw Taylor Gooch in there.
I like that. I like that, actually. I like that play a lot. I am going to go with Matt Wallace. He has been playing well in Texas. The last two events in Texas, Matt Wallace has played well. He almost won the Valero. So I just love Matt Wallace. He's another guy. I ain't fading him until I get like blaring signals that say, do not bet him.
All right. I like that. Again, a guy that I didn't mention before, but we're sitting here right at 8,000. If we want to use up all the money, which I don't love doing, but Brian Harman didn't make the cut last week. Not a course that should suit him that well. Before that, 18th at Quail, 13th at Hilton Head, 12th at Augusta, 3rd at the Players. I mean, this is a guy who's playing some really solid golf right now, and this course should suit him really well. If Brian Harman, 23rd last year, 31st the year before, 14th, 7th, 25th, 10th, 30th, missed cut back in 2012. So if you're not too turned off by that missed cut in 2012, he's been 31st or better in the last seven starts at this event, plays it every single year, a bunch of red numbers on the board. So yes, Brian Harman is my guy this week. Corey Connors, Taylor Gooch, Brian Harman, Kevin Kisner, Matt Wallace, Will Zalatoris, using up all the money in that lineup. I do like that, Amanda. I think that's a strong lineup.
Yeah, and this week's kind of a tough lineup because you have a lot of really good, like, middle tier players. You don't have all the top 10s, top 15s in the world, but, like, you have a lot of really, really good top 100 players in the field this week, top 200 players. So I think it's going to make making the lineups a little bit more difficult than the weeks where you have, you know, you can take two of the top guys and then a few other guys that are, you know, this week are really expensive, but like other weeks are not quite as expensive. So weeks like this are a little bit more difficult, in my opinion, making the lineups.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like we said, surprisingly good field. So you look there, you know, okay, there's a lot of value, but then you look at it and say, can Justin Thomas win this week? Yeah, absolutely. Can Jordan Spieth? Yeah, Jordan Spieth's going to be in a lot of my lineups. Can Colin Morikawa do something special like he did last year? Yeah. Daniel Berger defending Jet? Yeah. Like there's not a whole lot of guys, even at the top, that you look at and say, he's just a no play for me. You know, he's just like a non-starter, doesn't make any of my lineups, put him at zero on the optimizer, and he's not getting in there. It's like you can see a scenario in which all of those top-tier players can play well this week.
Yes.
All right. That was fun. Thanks once again for filling in for Jay Ray.
Thanks for having me.
We got the Gimme Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, as always. Got our friend Will Gray joining us this week to fill in for Justin. Can't wait for that. Peter.
Go Gators.
Jennings. There's a lot of Gator chomping on this thing.
Yeah, you poor UCF Knight over there. Just kidding. Yeah, wait, where did you go to school?
I went to Brandeis.
Louis Brandeis, the first Jewish Supreme Court justice, right?
There you go. All right.
Took me a while, but I got there.
There.
Took me a while to park the car, but I ended up parallel parking. It's fine.
There you go, Amanda. Thanks so much. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. Good luck with all of your plays for this week's Charles Schwab Challenge. Remember, you can find all our content on Golf Bet this week and every other week. Here's hoping you guys all hit the green.
We're finished talking.